Hello, this is Pat Lynch, and you are listening to another episode of As the World Turns or Burns. Joining me, as always, are
Kieran O'Keefe,
Brendan Connell,
Producer Jason.
Producer Jason. All right. Last episode, I did a couple face plants doing all kinds of like cultural pop culture references. I'm going to avoid it at this time. So
I was going to say try that. One more. And then
one more.
I did it. Our time's a charm.
No, I'm too sensitive. You know, my feelings get hurt. But yeah, this topic that we want to cover is the federalization of elections. What have we seen in current events? You have ICE, Border and Customs in Minneapolis, you know, obviously all the problems coming out of there. Attorney General Pam Bondi says, okay, we can bring this all to an end. You submit all of your voter, you know, like all your information, voter data, I guess, which I'm taking as driver's license and social security numbers, and submit that to the federal government, and then we can track. I think they do it for immigration enforcement. That's at least their what they're saying, and everything would be fine. And then last week, you know, Georgia, Fulton County, the election, you know, the like where they warehouse the election results from 2020 gets raided. And now they've seized that. Where those records went, we don't know. What they're doing with those records, we don't know. But obviously, it's a thing that Trump has always claimed that there was something that was fraudulent there. It was, I think they did three reruns, had the ballots done three times, didn't show any difference in terms of results, but nevertheless, you know, we have that. And then last little part to tie all this together is that you have Trump basically just saying that we need to federalize the election, you know, that it's about time just to bring this all in and provide some oversight. And the whole oversight is so that we can avoid having any fraudulent election results in November of this year. So that kind of sets the stage on everything, and kind of turn it over to you, Kieran, as far as kind of your thoughts in terms of where this is all going.
And where it's going, it's very hard to say, but this is something that, you know, Trump's been musing about voter fraud for as long as he's been in politics. You go back to the 2016 Iowa caucuses, he accused Ted Cruz of rigging it because Ted Cruz won. He was constantly talking about Republicans rigging the primary against him, or primaries against him. Accused Hillary Clinton of going to cheat, and then even after he won, said he actually won the popular vote too, even though he lost it by like 2.8, 2.9 million votes. Yeah. And then obviously 2020 is the big one where, you know, he screamed the whole time that it was rigged, rigged, rigged.
Yep.
And it's just, he's been laying the groundwork for this for years and years and years. He's put this into like the Republican mainstream. It was not mainstream in even like 2019. I don't think it was mainstream in the Republican Party, but he's made it almost like this litmus test of whether you can be a true Republican is whether or not you believe I won the 2020 election.
Yeah.
It's such like a standard test now within most areas of the Republican Party, I think, at this point. So I'm not surprised he's doing this. If you look at what he's saying, he's playing on an old trope. You know, it's all these cities, these corrupt and cities full of vice and scandal that happen to be big blue cities and the states he needed to have won and to win the last election, like Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta. And that's like there's a long history of that in the U.S. and maybe elsewhere too, of the sense that, you know, the cities are corrupt, that like they're not real America. Real America, pure America, honest America is a, you know, hardworking rural folk. In the cities, you have, there's corruption, there's, you know, all sorts of problems in the cities. And that's something that's been around for hundreds of years in the U.S. And he plays that, I think, pretty well. And that's Well, I think if you ask a lot of Republicans, you know, can you trust the blue cities to have honest, you know, honest elections? The answer is going to be no. But there's not as much skepticism about, you know, the red rural areas, which are voting, you know, just as much Republican as the cities are voting Democratic. So that's something he plays on very effectively. And I've made this point, maybe it was last semester, but the whole thing about the cities being full of crime and untrustworthy, the homicide rate in Arkansas is higher than the Bronx. Just going to put it out there. if you ask most Americans, they would get that wrong. So anyway, I think that's kind of like the backstory to it. I think what he can do is still fairly limited. The Constitution's pretty clear. This is a state issue. It is not a national issue. That's not the national federal government does not oversee elections. It's done at the state and local level. What I think is likely, though, that if I was going to guess the most likely scenario of how Trump is going to do this, is he's going to scream about this for the next few months about how the midterms are going to be rigged. And then he's going to maybe put some like ICE agents around the polls, you know, beef up ICE presence in the weeks leading up to the election, try to intimidate some people. He's going to scream about the voter ID issue. And that one, he seems like he has some support in Congress to pass
that's
a national.
That's the SAVE Act? Is that the?
I think that's what it's called. Yeah. And I think actually if you ask most Americans would probably agree there should be voter ID to vote. But there isn't. As far as I've seen, a lot of good evidence that there's widespread voter fraud in states where, you know, they have weaker or no voter ID laws. But I think whether or not you want to voter ID, it's a legitimate conversation. But Trump's using that as a avenue into screaming rigged for the election. It's one of his avenues to screaming rigged about the election. So there's that. And I think if the Democratic win in the fall is too big to rig, there's probably not much he can do about it. And that's Trump's own term. Remember back in 2024, he screamed, too big to rig, don't let them rig it this time, win by a lot. But if it's really close, that's where I think the problems are going to come in play, where maybe Trump will try to, you know, say, well, the DOJ needs to investigate this. We're going to seize the ballots in, I don't know, what's an important state, like the Ohio Senate race or something. And a lot of the states where, at least if the Senate was going to be decided, the states where it's going to matter the most are probably Republican states like Ohio, Texas even, because Democrats
Georgia,
another one. So if the Senate is in play, I think Republicans tend to have control of those states. In the House, it's a little bit different. But the House rules really leave it up to the body as a whole to determine whether or not they're going to seat members. And you could see Mike Johnson saying, oh, you know, this Republican candidate was winning, and then suddenly this tranche of ballots came out of nowhere, and I think that's very suspicious, so we can't seat this Democratic member. And it's kind of up to Mike Johnson, and then, I mean, the body can vote on it, but Mike Johnson has a huge amount of power over that, and he's talking, you know, a lot about this being rigged. He's more MAGA than I think John Thune is in the Senate. So Mike Johnson could try to deny the seats of a number of Democratic reps if it's really close. But I think this will only matter if it's really close. If the Democrats win handily in the fall, I don't think there's anything Trump can do about it.
Oh, Brendan.
Yeah, no, ditto. I mean, it's, I think it's it ties into like the problem of misinformation and disinformation. It just almost seems like no matter what happens or what the result is, sure, it's worse with like a closer result, but no matter what happens, Trump could just say, yeah, it was rigged.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, that narrative is like very potent. You know, I think people, it's almost like a conspiracy theory, right? It's like, oh, they're bringing these illegal immigrants and then they're going to vote and you don't need an ID and you could just systematically there's this effort to sort of vote in Democrats over Republicans. And yeah, it's crazy. I've never seen any evidence to show me that any of this is going on, but
there's
probably
any.
An alarming amount of people that believe this. So yeah, I don't know. It's worrying.
Well, they do check on this and they do recounts and they've studied
there's an
it,
independent and yet, agency that, yeah.
It's like any good conspiracy theory that don't let the truth obstruct it, you know, that they'll still just believe that it's just goes deeper and they haven't, you know, or that, you know, that of course these are, you know, paid shills or whatever to, you know, propagate the false story. And, you know, the real truth is that, yeah, this is how they win because the thing they, I guess, to buy in is that there's no legitimate way a Democrats could win. You know, that this country is Republican, you know, and the majority is, vast majority is Republican. And the only way that you see different results is by cheating. It's, whoa.
Yeah, I think there are a few reasons why it's gotten really bad in recent years. One is just Trump. Trump makes everything worse. I think if Trump had never come on the political scene, we'd still have problems, but it wouldn't be to this degree. Trump had this bully pulpit and just putting out these horrible ideas into the discourse and polluting our political environment is a big part of it. I also think when you have more polarization, people have a harder time accepting the other side winning, because we're at the point now where I think if you survey Republicans, Democrats, and say something to the effect of, if the other party wins the next election, what percentage chance do you think there is they destroy the country? And maybe a majority of parties would say that, yes, the other party, if in power, will destroy the country. When the stakes are that high, you're unwilling to accept defeat, I think, is part of the issue. And then third, I would say, I think, and this one's a little harder to prove, but we've had such geographic polarization in recent years where the rural areas are getting redder and redder and the blue areas are getting, or the cities are getting bluer and bluer. And maybe to some degree, it's just a matter of people not associating with others who have different political views. Yeah. That could be part of it too, where maybe in the past you had more exposure to people who had different backgrounds, whether that was through church, whether through school, whatever. If you don't live near those people, if you don't associate with those people, I'd have to think that makes it harder for you to believe there actually are millions of Americans who have a different point of view. And it's way worse on the right, so I'm not trying to make a false equivalency here, but there is a little bit of this on the left too. Like was it last summer? There was this, I don't know what happened to it, but this whole thing where like the Democrats were gonna in New York are gonna try to recount the ballots in Rockland County because they were some accusation the Republicans cheated there. And I don't know, I'm not saying it's the same, but I remember people I know talking about that, like, oh, maybe the election could be overturned, which I thought was very fanciful. So it's not equal on both sides, but it's much worse on the right, but there is a little bit of that on the left as well.
Oh yeah, well, 11 states so far have turned, you know, in that, you know, as far as the requested information, Arkansas is one of them. No surprise that, the question is that, you know, you say all 50 states submit all the driver's license, social security. Well, the federal government has all socials anyway, right? That's something that they. I don't think that resides at the state level. I think that's, you have to get one, you have to go apply through the government. But then, now they have this like master database. And I'm thinking, kind of going back to early on with Doge and what like Musk was doing, and then the whole relationship with Palantir, that now you just have this whole kind of master US database. I mean, where could that, you know, what could happen there? I mean, there's nothing's won, okay? It's because it's there, but I mean, what are the bad things that could happen?
I don't know. Probably a lot of bad things. Information gets in the wrong people's hands.
Yeah,
we just don't know right now. You have to wait and see how things play out. Probably.
I mean, a lot of this is with immigration enforcement. Does this help immigration enforcement at all?
To have access to the voter rolls?
Yeah. I mean,
I don't think so.
Yeah, because basically anybody who's undocumented can't vote. Mm-hmm. And
but they are voting, according to
no,
but, according to Republicans.
But every record has shown that they don't.
Yeah, I know.
And you know what I've heard is the biggest part of inaccuracy in voting rolls is that people move and don't, and somehow they don't have register. You know, they don't have them correctly placed in, you know, like they move from one state to another, so they're registered in two places, you know, and that kind of thing. And now they don't go, there may be one person that would go and vote in both states, but, you know, for typically it's going to be that's, there's duplication somewhere, mm-hmm. you know, that way. But, you know how sometimes it's like a request and it seems benign, but then you think, okay, there's some really, you know, something that's even worse coming out of this that wasn't really thought, you know, in terms of that you have this. And I guess the thing with the federalization is that the country is built on 50 states and each of them having, in, you know, a level, the United States, they have that level of independence. And now it's, you know, and it's great because it's a Republican doing this where you got this, you know, the massive power of the federal government now taking over, you know, a big, big part of American life.
Yeah, that's a trend that goes beyond just elections, but just the growing power of the national government vis-a-vis the states. And it's an interesting question, too, like, why has that taken place? Why is the federal government gaining more and more of this authority to do things that maybe previously was exclusively done by states?
Yeah, well, I guess it's always that classic hypocrisy that you'll use states' rights when it's convenient for you, you know, that we don't want a national law on whether abortion's legal or not. It's up to the states. So, mm-hmm. you know, you hear that, but then when it comes to, you know, something like this, now it becomes a federal. So there's never going to be a consistency, I guess.
And neither party is like in favor of state rights or, you know, national government. Like if you plot it out, Republicans and Democrats actually sort of behave the same in terms of whoever's got control of the White House and Congress. They try to do things that limit the ability of states to do things. Yeah. So even the Republicans who claim to be kind of the more state rights limited government party. So
yeah,
I feel like that's going out the window in the Trump era. You never hear him talk about states' rights or anything. He doesn't care.
Yeah. That's like it's his show. Yeah. Speaking of, okay, two kind of rants. One, I saw that Trump is holding up the funding in New York, New Jersey for this major federal project unless they rename like what's like a terminal and a subway station after him.
Was it Penn Station you want named after
him?
Yeah.
And Brendan and I were talking that, you remember Game of Thrones when the Mad King, you know, he was a great ruler, and then finally, all of a sudden, you know, he's like sending dragons off to burn complete villages and whatever. But you know, who's going to be the Jaime Lannister to just say this? You know, just keep your damn money. You know, just you know, we're not going to rename Penn Station. We're not going to rename the Kennedy Center. We're not going to build the Arch de Trump or you know whatever. You know, all that stuff. It's like, it's over, but you know everybody's cowering in the shadows. I mean, Chuck Schumer will write him a strongly worded letter, you know, and but you know, I read that he's trying to seemingly be the adult and think of the greater good and say, okay, that's fine, and go through the renaming it so they release the funds, but it has to end.
Well, that's probably one reason why the federal government has gotten more powerful. It has more monetary power than the states.
Yeah.
And it can just leverage that power in a way the states can't. Kind of going back to what we were just talking about.
Yeah, just that they're bullying. But, you know, yeah, that's, well, I guess the question, is there any Jaime Lannister out there? I mean, it would have to be a Republican. I mean,
I don't know a person yet. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I want to be careful and not speak in hyperbole.
Yeah.
Because Trump is not literally a dictator, right? People's eyes. He's fascist and dictator. No, yeah, he was elected. He won the election.
Right.
But, man, he's got some authoritarian tendencies to him. Because if you, for some reason, I'm going down this rabbit hole. I'm like reading up on totalitarian regimes and, you know, what leaders do in like these small things to kind of essentially develop a cult around themselves that really brainwashes people because they glorify the regime and right. And Trump does a lot of this. It's like what these leaders will do is like build statues of themselves and they're naming, you know, this and that after themselves. And it's like, yeah, this is like, I'm reading this stuff that's happening in Turkmenistan. I'm just like, oh, no, we do that too now.
Box check, yeah. Oh,
that is one of the things that's always worried me most about Trump is the semi cult of personality around him. It's not hugely widespread in the U.S., but I've never seen an American politician with such a cult of personality around him. Yeah. I don't know if that's ever happened before, something like this, where it's the people who support him. I don't even know that a lot of them support him because of the policies. It's more of like the personality than anything. It's just kind of the vibe he gives. Yeah. It's a vibe support rather than a policy support. If you ask them, what do you think of Trump's tax policy? I'm not sure you'd get much of an answer, but I think they like
probably don't know it.
Yeah. The vibe they get from him, and that's kind of more like a personality, cult of personality sort of attachment, which is dangerous because that it leads to the elevation of the individual as opposed to like our constitutional system, which is not what you want.
And that support group is also like really ride or die, right? Like they would do a lot of things, like just by the way they talk and act. I mean, truthfully, people talk, they don't act as much, but like, they're the type of people that are just kind of like, they get so like ingrained that like, they would do some crazy stuff for him.
Yeah, they
are. And they don't even know anything really about him other than that they like him as a person.
Yeah. So you remember this is the last Republican convention when Tucker Carlson came out and kept referring to Trump as daddy.
Yeah.
Like daddy's coming home and he's pissed. Or it was just like, it was so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Or in the previous Republican convention when Trump's like, I alone can fix it.
Right.
If any leader says I alone can fix it, they're lying to you. It's not how it works. You need to delegate authority. You need to be able to choose smart people around you. You alone can't do everything.
All right. Well, I have one more rant. And then we're going to do a Super Bowl prediction, all right? Ooh. But my other rant is, with all the stuff in the Epstein files and all the people that you need to kind of speak to, there's countless. Who gets subpoenaed? Bill and Hillary Clinton. I wish they would have just said, no. I mean, obviously on the Republican side, they have a complete disregard when it comes to this kind of thing. Yeah, just take us to court, send us to jail. I mean, it's one of those. Is that the first two people that you need to interview? It's all going to be a shaming exercise. Yeah, that's fine, but because there's plenty of shame to go around, but is that the has there been any, they've had the victims to speak, but I can't think of anybody else that's been, I think they may be called before Ghislaine Maxwell, but it's again, it's so absurd that that's going on. And then the interesting thing is that it sets that precedent that someday there's going to be a post-Trump, world. And, is that going to be something where, when he gets called to come in to testify on just rattle down the list, how will he do that? How will he react? I mean, I don't know. What thoughts, guys?
Yeah, it's just politics. They're probably the most prominent Democrat, at least Bill Clinton's most prominent Democrat mentioned the Epstein files. He has a history of being a little bit dishonest, if you want to put it that way, going back to the Monica Lewinsky scandal and other affairs he had while he was governor of Arkansas and then president. And the women who accused him of sexual abuse in the past. So it's not the first time he's been kind of caught up in something like that. And there are plenty of pictures of him and Jeffrey Epstein together. So Republicans also want to deflect attention away from Trump, and Bill Clinton's, I think, a good figure to do that. Yeah. He'd be a magnet for some attention. And also, like, Democrats in the past have been more inclined to protect the Clintons probably and fight back on it. But I don't know, the Clintons are kind of old now.
Like, yeah.
Bill Clinton's been out of office for 25 years. If you voted for Clinton, you're probably at least like at minimum 50, probably a lot older than that. So it's a different era of politics, and all the views he had are not views that would mesh with a modern Democratic Party. So I think Democrats aren't as inclined to try to defend him as they would have been, say, 15 years ago. Just, I think, a bunch of reasons, but politics ultimately is what they're bringing him and her to Congress for.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's politics. It's also kind of the unequal application of our judicial system, right, which goes outside the Epstein files. So, yeah, that's kind of the worrying thing, is it now seems that the rule of law applies differently on the basis of if you are a blue state or red state, or if you are a Democrat or Republican, and that's not what you want in a
in favor, out of favor.
Yeah.
Oh man. All right. Super Bowl predictions.
I mean, before we get started, I'll say, I mean, who was right 2 weeks ago when I had the Patriots beating the
Broncos?
Please
close.
Oh, I will.
I think I got both games right myself. I think I said Patriots and Seahawks.
Did we all say, I think we all said Pats?
Yeah, I believe we actually all said Pats Seahawks.
Okay, we're very smart people.
Okay, but then you have the mic. Though,
probably. I'll get started. I think it's going to be a really good game. And I think it's going to be a game where probably the defenses are going to dominate. I think there's going to be quite a few turnovers is my guess. And I really think it's whoever's got less turnovers is going to win. And I think it's going to be the Patriots. I'm going to pick the underdog. And I'm not biased. I'm just,
all right,
you know, Nostradamus.
Okay. All right. How about you, Kieran?
I'm going to say Seahawks 23, Patriots 20.
Okay. Producer Jason,
right now.
My guess is that it's going to be a close game, just like Connell said. I think it would be hilariously ironic and funny is, you know, the last time these two played in the Super Bowl, there was the infamous goal line
interception.
Interception. So I think it would be hilariously funny if they choose to go for a run all style offense and it backfires for the Seahawks. So I actually think that it's going to be a close game in the first half, but then as soon as adjustments are made, I think one team's going to blow the other team out. I think it's going to be like 38-14. Seahawks. Yeah, 38-14. I think the Pats are going to struggle against the Seahawks defense. I think they're going to be able to put up points, and it's going to be close, but then I think the Seahawks are just going to overpower Drake May. I think Drake May is a great quarterback, but you're on the big stage. All that pressure, I could see that's, what is it, the dark side is what they're calling them. I could see that defense just starting to tear him alive. So,
all right, so we got 2-1. I was originally going to say Seahawks. Brendan, I got to side with you. I got to go the Patriots, and here's why. That it's going to be Sunday morning. Darnold is going to look in the mirror and realize that he's Sam Darnold. And that, you know, he's not the Sam Darnold of this season. It's like, oh wait, I'm that Sam Darnold, and that Sam Darnold is the one that's going to appear. It'll be close, but that the Patriots are just going to they'll keep their points down and they'll get enough points to win. So it'll be low scoring, but I'll go with the Patriots.
I think it's a phenomenal point. I think it's the same thing. You hear a song that you haven't heard in a while, and it brings back memories.
And it's like, oh,
and
wait.
He's going to see the Patriots jerseys, and he's going to realize, I am Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
I'm Sam Darnold of the New York Jets.
Yeah, and I was lying on the turf looking up at these jerseys.
And I'm going to predict not only a Patriots win, I'm going to say there's going to be a pick six that's thrown by Sam Darnold.
You know, there you go.
Sam Darnold's going to see ghosts again. Yep. He said that when he saw that the Patriots, right? This is his rookie year.
Yeah.
He's calling the sideline. That was
saying,
him. Okay.
I'm seeing ghosts. Yeah.
So did they play? Did the Seahawks and Pats play each other this year?
I don't think so.
No.
So it will be his first time.
So there it is. It's on the record. So it's evenly divided, and we will go and look over the results when we have our next podcast. But let's close up and just say thank you for listening to As the World Turns or Burns. As always, joining me are
Kieran O'Keefe,
Brendan Connell,
and producer Jason.
And even way in the background is a familiar voice from a way, way back. And who is it?
Producer Cheyenne.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's been a while since she's visited us. She's become a big-time nursing star. But nevertheless, we appreciate everything that our listeners do. Please, if you can, recommend us to others, and keep listening, and we'll get back with you next week. Take care.
This podcast is sponsored in part by Lion College and Kilt Studios. Thank you to Jonah Winter for the intro and outro music.